Recording in a secret location deep in the heart of the Smeelosphere, in a world where everyone rocks a stash like Harold. You're listening to C4 on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, the podcast that wishes it had abs like Chris Higgins.
Welcome to the 28th episode of C4 from CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am your usual host, Chris Golden, at LifeForce on Twitter. Not joined by Matt Lee or Clay Emo. They were both away on assignment. I think Clay happens to be somewhere, while Matt, at least we know, is in Japan. But thankfully, Patrick Johnson is joining us again, two episodes in a row. In fact, I think Patrick's going to be able to tell us which host he likes the most. He's now had Matt, Clay, and he'll get me today.
Obviously, Matt, how you doing? Chris, great to see you. I'm very happy to be here, as always. I'm delighted that you're here, because I know that the best is saved for last.
Thank you.
And you're the last of this little run that I've had. Clay, you're so kind to them. You know, I mean, I think it was a little bit more, last week we talked a little bit about how you guys were just too busy and too cool and whatever. You know, you were in Vegas, Matt's still in Japan, chasing storms and whatnot. And, you know, so enough said about him. Clay Emo, though, I mean, started getting these texts from him last night. I'm not sure I can make it. You know, this, that, and the other, you know, family business, this, that, and the other. I'm like, dude, that's all right. Just send your son. You know, we know that he's going to take over anyway.
Well, yeah, Sean, actually, Matt's been trying to get Sean on the podcast.
Right.
And I think it's Matt's big ulterior motive of eventually Sean will just take over.
Just we'll push Clay out. And, you know, he may be the happiest man in the world, but really, who needs him?
No, we don't. We get by without him more often than not. But Clay, we love you. But yeah, I was in Vegas. I was down in Sin City enjoying my hotel stay.
We talked about your hotel stay.
Yeah, I heard. And I just wanted to correct something. You guys had seen the picture of the bottles of water,
yes,
and you
yes.
had talked about how one of them was like full to the top.
Yeah,
that actually wasn't the problem bottle. See, we get into a new room, and the one that was actually down a little bit lower, the seal was cracked.
Shut up.
So I'm talking about partially used water.
Oh my God.
It was just it was a nightmare. Like, all because the room we booked online wasn't available.
Right.
And from there, it was like a cascading series of events. We had, they moved me the day of my brother's wedding. They told us they were going to move us in the morning. Finally, at 4 o'clock, we get a phone call. And it takes 45 minutes for a bell person to bring our keys.
Wow.
And we're like calling down, hey, we'll come and do it. We don't need someone to do this for us. No. It's the least we can do. We go into the new room. Carpets are wet. They must have done a hasty clean and carpet, like shampoo. Well, why move us into that room? If that was the case, we would have moved after the wedding. So we get in there. We get the partially used water. The following night, a pipe bursts in the building and our hallway is flooded.
Are we going to... Well, we mentioned last week, but are you going to mention which hotel this was?
Oh, it was the fantastic Tropicana.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, the new Tropicana. You know what? I got to...
A pipe burst.
Yeah, and no hot water for like how many? And it was funny. I called down because I'm like, okay, they need to know that there's a flood in the hallway. And they're like, oh, Mr. Golden, we totally know about it. In fact, you don't have any hot water. And I'm like, how can you be happy about this? So that goes on. But in fairness, they took care of our entire stay.
Okay.
They actually gave us $150 in bar and restaurant to credit. They took care of all of our room nights.
Okay.
So in I think they went above and beyond. I wasn't looking for any of that. I just wanted the room.
Yeah.
But what the kicker was is my wife and I, we come back to the hotel on, was it Sunday night? And they had obviously Sunday? Yeah, it would have been Sunday night. No, Monday night. So they've had Monday night football on the big screen
right.
in the lounge.
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, they left it on the big screen. And I guess it would have been Sunday because it would have been NBC. They had a show about Satan and the Antichrist on the big screen on over the speakers. Like, and I'm sitting there, I couldn't do anything but laugh. I'm like, this is just the, you know, cherry on top of a wonderful hotel
That's
stay.
Amazing.
I mean, when Keenan and Messier both appeared on the screen, we're talking like bad news. Sorry, I was trying to do the whole Satan and Antichrist.
I get it. I like it.
But yeah, it was just, it's a nice place. It's obviously older. It's been fixed up. And from what I can gather, maybe my stay was very unique, but... So nice to say, I may go and if I go back to Vegas, stay somewhere else.
Well, as I think I was telling you, that, you know, I've had good times at the Cosmopolitan. Now, obviously, that is probably out of most people's price range. I am fortunate that I have a good friend of mine who goes there fairly often and plays enough there that they tend to comp him rooms, so we stay there.
Get the money back.
And I know that Clay's good buddy, Mike McBurney, is a huge fan of Vidara, which he, you know, says is a bit cheaper but still quite classy. It's the newer places that don't smell like cigarettes. I think that's the strangest thing. You go down there. Yeah. And it's just, you know, of course people can smoke. It's Sin City, right? But it's gross.
Well, it's 3 years ago was the first time I went down, and I was blown away. Like, I never even occurred to me that smoking is a regular thing.
Yeah.
And you could actually see the haze as you walked into some of these older casinos because the ceiling was low, the ventilation wasn't working well. It wasn't as bad this trip, but it's still bad. Like, having, you know, being a Canadian where you can't smoke anywhere except your own house these days.
Yeah.
It's just a complete culture shock that every single person seems to be lighting a cigarette. I kid you not. I saw a kid getting pushed down in a stroller, and I think he was puffing a stogie.
I believe it.
It was nuts. But yeah, no, it was a good stay. I missed so many hockey games. I mean, this is the greatest thing about the Canucks schedule. There's two games, and it's like the season was over.
It was really odd, wasn't it? I mean, we were making jokes here. You know, I work at the province, and we were making jokes that we didn't know what to do with ourselves. Like, how do we cover a week of nothing? And, I think we had kind of a fun time with it. But, you know, definitely was a very, very strange period of time.
Well, I mean, we'll get into this, but in Edmonton, we saw Dave Nonis was chatting with Benning and Lyndon. You know, the least that Nonis could have done is come out for the earlier Edmonton game to at least created a week's worth of scuttlebutt
exactly.
for everyone to talk about. But no, he shows up for the Friday night game to shoot the proverbial, because from what I've heard, he can't make hockey decisions anyway.
No.
So I don't know if he was just, you know,
on a
tour or what.
The thing that I thought was funny was somebody I saw on Twitter tweet, you know, I think it was yesterday morning, going, I'm sorry, you're telling me that a hockey man was spotted at a hockey game? What do you think these people do? You know, and then someone else went, well, you know, the best one was when they were, you know, I think it was a game in Carolina, like early last week.
Mm-hmm.
There were 15 pro scouts. And if someone else said, what do you think pro scouts do? Their job is to see what other teams are doing. They're not there necessarily to look for players. So who knows? I mean, it could have been anything. The list is long. Maybe he was looking at Jeff Petry. I don't know. But who knows?
Yeah, no, but again, the gift he could have given to everyone was to show up for the first game.
Because,
you know, when you have a home-and-home series with all that piss and vinegar between the Oilers and the Canucks, that obviously you need a week gap in between.
Yeah.
I when I saw that, I was just laughing, because it's like everyone's like, oh my God, it's Nonis. I'm like, what do you care? It's like a guy, he works for a hockey team. And of like all the guys that work for hockey teams, that's the guy who's just a guy.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. But yeah, let's start by talking about what we saw this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Lightning were in town, and we'll get to the Oilers in a moment. But the thing that occurred to me as I was watching the Canucks play the Lightning is that I'm still sitting there thinking, if the Canucks make the playoffs, I'll be okay with that.
Right.
But they're nowhere near as bad as last year. Like, it was an entertaining game, to say the least. And I think you look at what occurred. Well, let's see. You give Stamkos a breakaway. Apparently, that guy's good.
Yeah.
The fact that Stamkos had, like, was it midway through the first period, after scoring two goals, had a chance to go and pot a third.
Unbelievable.
By the 10-minute mark.
Right.
Guy's a stud.
Yeah.
But the Canucks fought back, and that's nice to see. Like, I have no problem with a team that's going to go through a rebuild, that's going to fight each and every night.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't for, really, a bad penalty from Burrows, that game's different.
What did you think of that Burrows penalty? I thought he was a bit hard done by. I mean, it was, you know, the usual night. It was a bit more extreme, and I think, than most kind of little melees around the net after the whistle. Yeah, he kind of took a swing, but, you know, stuff's going on. You're trying to protect yourself. I don't know. I mean, it just seemed like, let's pick somebody.
Well, and that's definitely what the penalty was, and the Canucks were on a power play, so you don't go and pick someone and generally throw the other team onto a significant advantage, especially when it's a game of pick someone.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for Burrows, he goes to the box, and then Bieksa gets caught up in the new rule where you can't go and swing your stick and take the puck and the player.
I was sitting there laughing about that one, because he's going, tell me that wasn't all puck. And you're like, but Kevin, there's a rule now, and they say you can't, doesn't matter anymore.
Well, the same thing happened against Edmonton with Tanev, and everyone's like, oh, it should be a penalty.
Yeah.
When I looked at it, at first I'm like, nah, why? He got all puck.
Yeah.
You can. You take the puck, great. It's just a two-minute penalty for tripping.
Yeah. No, I had that same thought. I couldn't believe it. I was like, do the refs not get the memos? Like, what's going on here? But, you know, who knows? It's a call, I think, actually, on the whole, I think it's actually a smart one because it's not like, you know, you got to actually play the game. You can't just go around, oh, I got the puck and then I took him out. Like, people are trying to make stuff happen. And in terms of trying to promote offense, I think it's a good one.
Oh, I don't doubt. And I actually like the fact that they're taking the penalty shot away from that.
Right.
Where you get the puck.
Yeah.
Because I think what was happening in the past is the referee would be put in that position where, oh, I got to make judgment here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's a penalty, got the puck, but if I do call a penalty, it's supposed to be a penalty shot. So if I do nothing.
Yeah.
Then no harm, no foul. Whereas at least now you're right. Creates offense, player safety. Because anytime that player is going down, the defenseman, the offensive player, maybe the goaltender, metal posts, bars, straight into the boards. You know.
Well, or cutting. I mean, it's going to promote guys cutting to the net, right? I mean, that's what you want to see. You want to see people taking the puck to the net. And if they've, you know, if they've kind of been conditioned to think, oh, well, there's going to guy dive at me, and now they know there's not going to be, they might feel a little more confident to do that. So, I like it a lot.
So back to the game itself, though. Let's see. Edler gets a goal. Edler seems to be playing better.
Chris Tanev, baby.
Well, I'm a big Tanev supporter, so I'm trying to, you know, downplay my...
No, it's. I really think, you know, I mean, a lot of it last year, if you looked at the numbers, he had a lot of bad luck. There was no doubt that he had a lot of bad decisions that reinforced his bad luck. There was a lot of bad luck. It was like everything, I think, you know, you were sort of suggesting earlier, was that nothing could have been worse than last year at all, in all facets. The way that Edler's playing, it's he's playing a smart game. He's playing the way he needs to play, which is that he needs to step up. He needs to handle the puck. He needs to shoot. And he needs to be, you know, encouraged to do that. And having a guy like Tanev riding shotgun with him, it's a bit like the Hamhuis-Bieksa pairing. I mean, we know when Bieksa was at his best a few years ago, it was because of Dan Hamhuis. And Hamhuis, you know, he's just so steady, and he knows what his partner's going to do, and he can just read, where do I need to go, you know, just in case.
Yeah. Well, you go back further, look at Bieksa and Willie Mitchell.
Yeah, great.
I mean, the reason that pairing was great is, you know, Bieksa could go as, you know, devil-may-care style of play, because Willie was always back there holding the blue line, holding the fort, and they got that chemistry. They knew each other. Dan Hamhuis and Bieksa, the same thing. And I to that point, we were talking on previous podcasts how, you know, Chris Tanev is very cool, calm, defense-first style player. That's a good compliment to a player like Edler, where you can actually go and tell him, you know what, don't worry. Because I brought up the fact that I had always wondered if maybe he was doubting himself. Like, decisions seemed to occur late, and when he made them, they weren't good decisions.
Right.
So it was as if there was a cascading series of events that would just continue to put him into harm's way or put his team into trouble. Now, he can go and make these decisions. Know, hey, if I make a mistake, my partner's got my back.
Well, it's also where he makes the mistake on the ice, right? If he's feeling more confident to be up the ice, he's probably going to make the mistake further up the ice, and there's a better chance of them recovering from that mistake.
Well, and the fact that he was carrying the play, I mean, that's what the Canucks have been missing on that power play goal that he got, was, you know, a defenseman carrying the puck in as opposed to the drop pass and hope the defenseman can dump and shoot.
Well, that, and I mean, I think the other thing was that Tortorella last year was, and Mike Sullivan, his assistant, were really adamant that defensemen play a much more cautious game, that they not jump up the ice. And as we said, you know, we saw Edler making mistakes in parts of the ice that perhaps he didn't used to because he was just further up the ice.
Yeah. The other component, though, that was made very apparent to the Vancouver Canucks blue line is that there is very little depth. That Weber-Spisa pairing was an interesting duo, to say the least. Corrado get a start now?
You know, it's going to be interesting. They certainly didn't use Yannick Weber very much. And, you know, we do know that one of his strong points is, you know, playing on the power play. He's got a good shot. He distributes the puck well. He's not the biggest guy. He's a guy that needs to have the puck up the ice. Him and Lucas Spezza, I mean, we're starting to see, you know, that Spezza is far from a finished product. He makes mistakes. I find him an interesting player because he's got, you know, he's a big guy.
Yeah.
He likes to move with the puck. And a big guy moving the puck, as we've seen with a guy like Zach Cassian, is always a good thing. But he also has these flubs in his own end that keeps him under immense pressure. So is Yannick Weber the right partner for that? I don't think so.
No.
If we could, you know, if they could find another Chris Tanev, you know, I think it's a different story. I'm not saying Lucas Pisa is Alex Edler, but I think he's the kind of guy that needs the right partner, and I'm not even sure Ryan Stanton's the right partner for him.
Well, when we were talking about our preseason prognostications, mm-hmm. I had Weber and Spisa together as the final pairing.
Right.
I think Matt was the one who had Stanton and Weber.
Right.
Clay was the one who had Stanton and Spisa. So Clay, I think, wins $5 from both of us.
Oh.
Yeah, putting money on the line. And, you know, Clayton wins, of course. I look at that pairing, though, and now, knowing what I know, I like what Weber brings to the power play.
Right.
Like, I believe the shot is worthwhile, but from a defensive perspective, he needs, just like Spisa would need, you know, that sort of stronger stay-at-home defenseman. This is where Corrado, I think, fits in well, because Corrado, in his few games with the Canucks, has shown that he has a tendency to be more like Chris Tanev.
Yeah.
Last year maybe wasn't the best indication of his play, but the season previous when they burned that year, he was calm, he was cool, he made no mistakes, which as a young player, if you make no mistakes, you've essentially done everything that's been asked of you and more.
Yeah. I come down on the position of, I mean, there's two things I think about with young players. I know people always want to see the young guy. They love the underdog. They want to see this other guy get in the lineup. But the reality is, can you play the game? If you can't play at the NHL level, you're not going to make it in. Now, what I see here with Corrado, a guy like Corrado, is he really that much different from Yannick Weber, as you said, right? He's got maybe a different style of play. But even if he's not, he's the younger guy. You need to give him the reps. So if Weber's not going to get on the power play, which I don't think he had maybe any shifts last night, certainly if he did, it was only one or two, because that second unit mostly was some combination of Hamhuis and Tanev or Bieksa. I mean, we saw the top four were kind of cycled through the power play.
Yeah.
So if Weber's not getting on the power play, then really what's the point?
There is none. And that's, again, the reason I had him in the lineup was because I thought that he would contribute to the power play. I would not have seen Hamhuis being the guy who got power play time.
Right.
Especially having seen him last season, although it could have been systems. The fact that he, you know, the defense were asked to be, you know, that fourth forward that we see the Canucks have gone back to on the power play. But it just seems that if Weber can't be on the power play, he's a depth player. He simply goes upstairs.
Right.
But after Corrado, let's say in a highly unlikely event, another Canuck goes down with an injury on the blue line, so Stanton's out for however long. Who next?
Who next?
Yeah, who after Corrado?
Well, you know, you look down in the minors, and I was a big fan of Peter Anderson, you know, when he was a younger guy. I'm not really sure he's the guy. I think he might see some time this year, but there's a couple, you know, there's a guy by the name of Alex Biega who was talked big time about last year as being a very solid AHLer. Can he make the step up? We'll see. I mean, all these guys are in the AHL for a reason. You know, Bobby Sanguinetti's another guy that's got some, you know, a lot of experience.
The vampiric one.
Right? But, you know, I think it's a real worry, as you said, who comes up next? Who's the number seven? Who's the number nine guy? I mean, it's always funny to talk about the number nine guy, but if we look, you know, in past years, the Canucks were so much deeper in defense. That was one of the big lessons that Mike Gillis had, was that you cannot have too many NHL defensemen. And,
well,
and it worked
Rome,
out.
Aaron Ballard,
Rome, right?
Alberts. I mean, Rome played far more than anyone would have ever looked for him to play.
Right.
Yeah, there was always that depth. And I look at the Canucks as they're built. Hamhuis has already got, you know, his nose sculpted.
Beautiful nose. Looks like jam.
It does look like jam, except it's not.
Yeah.
You have Bieksa, who's good for at least a few missed games in the season with his style of play. Edler, as we've seen, has gotten some bumps and scratches. So if we consider that the blue line is going to get down there, I think we need to know, is there another serviceable defenseman that can come up for a few games? And I hope there is. This is a question that I have never had to ask for years.
Right.
Just because of that. There was this depth on the blue line. The depth was issues were always up front. Now we have as many third line players as you can possibly throw a stone at. So that's not a problem. It's like we can't have both. Or at least serviceable depth for a few games.
Well, I think the interesting challenge is going to be what happens next year. Because there are some guys in the system who have some potential. There's a defenseman, you know, like you look at Ben Hutton, who's got some real potential. You look at there's a guy named Evan McEnany, who's potentially got some interest. But they're
McEnany,
McEnany. Anyway,
I was going to say, that name already sounds horrible to pronounce.
It's a nightmare. Anyway, he's playing back in the OHL. You know, there's a few guys in the mix that that have some potential. But as you said, you know, it's a question of what are they going to do. And, of course, everyone loves talking about all the forwards. And I think Jordan Subban maybe has potential, but he is so small. That's the thing. I mean, the kid can handle the puck. There's no doubt about it. But he is tiny.
So we talked about this a couple episodes back.
Mm-hmm.
I want your opinion on this. How much is his being drafted have to do with his brother?
Oh, I think it has everything to do with his brother. There's no denying the kid's got talent. I think there's no denying that. The question is, he's so small. You have to kind of, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, especially if you're drafting him in the fifth round as he was.
Sure.
You know, I think you might as well, hey, listen, we know that there's a family talent here. Is he going to be PK? I think it's very, 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 very safe to say no. He doesn't have the size factor, but he can handle the puck. There's no doubt about that. We saw a little bit of that in preseason. He played you know, a little well in the glimpse we got of him.
Yeah, and because of injury, he gets a whole lot of ice time, scores a goal, and see ya.
Well, and that's how it's going to go. You know, I mean, he's 19. He's got to play another year.
No, I get that. I remember when I saw that occur, the fact that they sent him down.
Yeah.
The injury would have allowed for him to have that excuse. Yeah, we'll keep him up a game or two. Just give him the exposure. Yeah. Everyone knows he was going to go back down.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm perplexed that the Vancouver Canucks seem to hope that one of these days they're going to draft or sign or trade for the Wright brother. I mean, there's O'Reilly, Subban, Korea. Yeah. Fedorov, ever since Bure, we got one right.
Yeah.
It's like, and I think we had a Sutter in there.
Well, and the Sedins, you know, the Sedins were the right.
Yeah, but we didn't know which one to take, so we took both of them, right? If they had been split up, guaranteed, someone else got the better Sedin. Regardless. This Rabada-Sedin combination looks good.
It's fun.
Like, I get that the teams have now figured out, okay, we're going to shut that line down.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice to see even that second line that the Canucks, you know, threw out in the ice, just the voracious forecheck and the chances they were generating with all the traffic in front of the net. If we can see more of that, and that line can capitalize.
Yeah.
That's going to free up Sedin's and Verbata.
Well, I think you're always going to see the best sort of checkers or the best matchup is going to go up against the Sedin's. But, yeah, you know, there's no doubt. I have never had any doubts about Chris Higgins' abilities as a hockey player. Alex Burrows, you know, he's still trying to find that role. He's trying to figure things out without the Sedin's. He's just got to keep his motor running. I think he knows that. He had obviously such a hard season last year with the injuries. And just bad luck couldn't, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, think about how many posts he hit before he finally scored. And then Nick Bonino, who I think everyone actually understands is never going to be Ryan Kessler. I think people know that. And he's done all right. The thing that worries me, and it's still, I'm always kind of on the fence of how important faceoffs really are, but he's having a lot of problems. Well, the draw, and the whole team is, really.
Against Tampa, Hank was the only one to be above 50%, and he was pushing, what, 60?
I think the team as a whole is still sitting at 46%, which is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, it's not, like I said, it's not a massive problem, but it's one of those ones that it's just kind of, I think it speaks to just a little bit of other things in terms of just pure talent. You know, if you're going to spend time on a guy that can win more than 50% of his faceoffs, well, that's probably a good sign about other things that he can do in his game.
See, I don't know enough about him, but I'm wondering if Bonino might not be that player that mm-hmm. you find or develop into the wing as opposed to being in the middle. The Canucks have Matthias. They have Richardson. I think Vey can you know, play in the middle. So with the number of guys that can play center, which, again, I can't believe the Canucks have more than four centers in a lineup.
Yeah.
Why not try that? I mean, it's early in the season. Maybe mix it up some?
Well, Chris Higgins was a center when he was younger. I mean, he came up and he played that, and he kind of discovered that he didn't really want to be that guy anymore. He liked playing on the wing.
Well, and I don't know if Higgins' style is one that I would like to see in the middle. Like, if Bonino can turn into that, Brendan Morrison style of player. Like, Brendan wasn't the type of guy that was going to go and be your power forward.
Yeah.
He simply complemented, you know, both skill and power.
Yeah.
Perfectly.
Uh-huh.
I still think that one of the reasons the Canucks did go through that subtle downturn was because they lost Morrison, not to do with Naslund or Bertuzzi. Right. Although, obviously, all three having issues all around the same time didn't help.
There's that balance in the lineup kind of question, what kind of roles people are filling, yeah.
But yeah, Morrison was very, very durable. It's like Manny Malhotra. Like, yeah. Manny could have easily centered that top line. Not to say he was a top line player, but you knew you weren't going to be hurt by him up there, and he could win a face-off anywhere on the ice.
I think the Malhotra, I mean, we talked quite a bit about him, I think, last week, actually, was just his ability to do all the little things, and that's so important. And so with a guy like Bonino, it is really going to be important to watch. What else does he do? You know, what are the little things that he is doing? He's a good... All these guys, as you said, there's tons of third-liners on this team, and third-liners are good hockey players. They're not your elite, you know, cream-of-the-crop talent, but these guys know what they're doing. They're not hopeless players. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, especially, you know, if, say, he works with Burrows for the rest of the season, if Higgins sticks with him for the rest of the season, how that all plays out. There's a mix still being figured out.
Sure.
You know, you look at some of the guys, you look at the fourth line, you look at Mathias, you look at Hansen, you know, two guys that I think have a lot of question marks hanging over them for this season. Both players who do good things are on contracts that are actually pretty good value for what they're being at, you know, for what they are imagined to be able to do. But they're not getting the reps. And, you know, that's the kind of thing. Like, some of these guys are going to need to find, if the Canucks are going to have success this season, some of these guys are going to need to prove that in the ice time they're being handed, that it is sort of a through the roof contribution.
Well, and that, to me, that's where those two third lines come into play. Like, there isn't that true second line, but you have two third lines that can chew up minutes. Voracious forecheck. I'm pleased to see that they've not gone full lunch bucket. Like, they're actually playing that sort of open ice, free-flowing game. Like, at one point in the third period, it was end-to-end. And the fact that the Canucks had puck luck for once, where the open net was missed, what, two times, and I think Bieksa had two block shots.
Yeah.
And I think two posts on the Canucks for that point of
the time. Going the other way,
exactly.
Well, puck luck working against them, but I get what you mean.
No, but still, I guess I sort of was saying is that they had the luck. Normally, wide open net, guy fires it down the ice, backhanded, blindfolded, one arm, and it goes in. Didn't matter, right? Fourth line. That's actually the one that I have some concern with. It doesn't seem to be that the fourth line has size. Like, I look at the game against Tampa, we were out hit. And when you have the two lines that you have, this sort of blue-collar lineup for 2, 3, and 4, how is it that a team like Tampa out-hits you? I know that was the game plan coming in. John Cooper obviously watched how the Canucks manhandled the Oilers, and when the Oilers tried to return the favor, it really shut things down. But how is a lineup like Tampa out-hitting
Vancouver? Well, this is the numbers thing that in the end, actually, partly because the Canucks were trailing, but partly because they were actually playing really well, was that the Canucks were actually dominating possession. They had the puck more than Tampa did.
Oh, yeah. Well, Tampa had, what, 18?
Right. Just look at the shots. Yeah. The game in the end was, slightly tilted towards the Canucks because they were chasing the game. That's something that always comes up, right? The team that's trailing is going to get more chances. Just how it works. So that's why Tampa's going to have more hits. Now, but you're right. This is a Canucks team that isn't necessarily built on a kind of hit you when we don't have the puck type of game. They're much more... This is the thing that I think has been interesting and partly why we think it's so exciting, and is that they really are aggressive in trying to get the puck away from the other team. So they don't even give you any space. I think it also comes down to how people count hits. I mean, this is one of the things that's always kind of driven me nuts, is that, you know, some buildings... You know, count hits is like any time a guy comes near another player. You know, I think Minnesota was notorious for that for many years. So, you know, how are the Canucks playing? Were they going around, you know, throwing the big hits? I mean, we saw Cassian try to throw a couple big hits last night. But the fact is the style of play, I think, is exactly what you're talking about. Is that this is not a team built to go after and kind of pound you into submission. Because they're just not those types of players. That's not the team they've got. I mean, they've got Dorsett, who likes making a mess, but he's not a big guy. I mean, there's a photo worth looking for, which I think was absolutely hilarious. It's Dorsett basically in the grill as best as he could of Ben Bishop, because Bishop is so tall.
It was the back cover of the province.
Yeah, well, if you saw it, yeah, exactly. And it was a hilarious photo. And you know, he's not a big guy. Hansen, I think we know Hansen's, you know, he's had moments where he's been a very aggressive, very physical player, but he's not a big guy.
No.
Mathias does not play a big guy game. He's got a good frame, but he's not a big, huge, crushing checker. He's a guy that's going to try to get the puck off you and take it down to the other end of the ice. It's going to be an interesting one because this actually goes back more towards the style of play that Alain Vigneault was so in favor of, which is let's just get the puck away from them. Let's not worry about putting them through the glass. If we've got a guy that can do it, great. But I hear what you're saying though, because in the end, if another team is hitting you all the time and you're taking hits galore, it's going to wear you down.
Well, and that's I just think of the top line. Like, how many hits can Hank, Daniel, and even Radim take before one of them gets bumped out of the lineup because they've taken far too many bruises? And I think that that's where, as teams see that they continue to do this, that will be a continued problem. I'm not advocating that Tom Sestito get thrown in the lineup.
Right.
That's not, in my mind, that's not how an NHL team needs to protect its players.
Yeah.
It simply needs to go and control the game. And to your point about Alain Vigneault's style of, if we have the puck, they don't, less damage, and let's just worry about that possession. Yeah, that was indicative of last night.
Yeah.
Even if the Canucks were chasing, or even if they had the lead, I think the Canucks' game plan is, if we have the puck, and we have the puck, and we're chewing up big minutes in the offensive end, that's just as good as scoring an additional goal, as long as that the forecheck continues. Because that was the one thing that drove me nuts about AV's style of hockey, is the Canucks would go and get that one or two goal lead and then line up on center ice.
Absolutely.
And we saw a little of that in Edmonton, where late in that period, when the Canucks were playing a game of bend, don't break, you know, what was the forecheck? Well, once the puck got to the red line, maybe we may go after it.
Yeah. I think the thing that's worth watching, and, in you know, I think it's being realistic. You mentioned this earlier. This is a team that has a good chance to make the playoffs. This is not a team that's probably going to go all the way. Is how well are they doing with the lead? Are they doing the kind of sit back kind of thing? Or are they just saying, you know what, we got to be realistic. We got to go for it. We got to play up the ice, and we got to keep things at the other end of the ice. And that means forechecking and being smart behind us, which again also ties us back into what you were saying about the defensemen. The question of how much are these guys willing to get up the ice and keep the puck at the other end of the ice?
Yeah, I don't know. I just want to talk briefly a little bit about the game in Edmonton.
Sure.
Because obviously the Canucks would want to play Edmonton and Calgary.
And there's only two games to talk about, so it's kind of hard not to.
No, I know. there was a point where Zach Cassian was on the tracks coming across the blue line laterally. Mm-hmm. Hall had the puck, and Hall saw Zach last minute and got out of the way. Does Zach Cassian play another NHL hockey game if he hits Hall there?
Yeah. I mean, it depends how he hits him. You know, I mean, if it's Scott Stevens and he puts his shoulder into his head.
I don't think it would have been Scott into his head. Like, the way it looked was Zach knew that Hall had his head down. And I think that's one of the knocks on Taylor Hall.
Yes,
the guy doesn't look up, he looks at the puck.
Absolutely, yeah.
It just happened to be that he lifts his head, sees Zach, and just sort of moves out of the way.
Right.
Zach didn't have his legs out. Mm-hmm, he was just coming through. So I think it would have been a solid.
No, I know that. Yeah, it was a big moment.
Hit.
Yeah.
But just by reputation alone, I mean, I look at the fact that Cam Hughes got his nose, you know, shaved by an errant stick that four officials on the ice couldn't see.
Yeah.
And that's no problem. Now, I'll give the fact that Cassian had he just swung a stick.
Yes, absolutely.
Without care of the world.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to link the two. But I think the Canucks, or at least Cassian, might have this reputation.
Well, here's two things. We'll come back to the reputation thing. You know, it's really interesting. I found myself really on the other side, I think, of most people's opinion, which is like, you're supposed to be responsible for your stick. And I'm like, yeah, you are. I mean, when Cassian did that, he was being an idiot. We all knew. We all saw what he did. The Arcabello on Ham Hughes thing, I think, to my opinion, and we love kicking and screaming about, well, that's this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. I'm like, if that had been the other way around, would we really, really be saying, oh, well, you know, he got away with one there? We'd be saying, no, he would have been hit on the ice, and that was an unfortunate accident. And I think that's the thing that kind of, I was like, really? Are we really getting to this point? But that's my own, my thought on it. As for Cassian, his rep, I don't think there's any doubt about it that, you know, he is not, certainly not doing himself any favors. No. Willie Desjardins talked about how, you know, Cassian was doing his clapping at the ref.
Oh, God,
in the
I'm
box.
Surprised. He should have gotten 2 minutes.
I couldn't believe.
I expected he
was
going to
get 10, you know, and it's just, it's there's a, there's an aspect to Cassian that he does need to play on the edge, right? He's a guy that he plays an aggressive style. He's at his best when he's playing an aggressive style. He's at his best when he's playing a bit angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so stuff like that are signs that he's feeling frustrated, he's mad, but he's also playing aggressive. Now, does he need to learn how to keep that in line? He does. Yeah. Will he? I'm not convinced.
I think if he played more like Burrows plays. Now, Burrows mm-hmm. will frustrate you from time to time. Like, sure, it might be bad luck that he happened to be the guy pulled out of the Tampa scrum. But if he plays that style of play, aggressive, honest hockey, hits hard, doesn't mind mixing it up, I got no issue with that. But it is the stuff that... it's almost the immaturity. I don't know how to describe it as anything other than that. Where, the clapping, I expected that to be two.
Yeah.
You know, 10 probably wouldn't have been all that harmful. Two would have been the worst. The fact that he was reacting about the hold before he got high-sticked himself against Tampa.
Yeah.
That's a penalty. It's always been a penalty.
It was totally a penalty. I was just like, as soon as I saw the replay, I was like, you idiot. What are you doing?
Yeah, if he could have easily gone and muscled his way around, but what does he do? He gets the free arm up. Anytime you do that, you're totally going to get that call against you. Regardless, if I go back to the Edmonton game, though, Edmonton seemed to try to manhandle the Canucks. The Canucks handled it quite well. And as we know, they won. They were 3-0. The parade was being arranged to go down Georgia, right by the art gallery, hang a right at Howe down to Robson, around the other way.
Clay and I, of course, talked about the route that leads out to Richmond, and then people would take transit to Surrey, but Clay advised against that.
Well, I don't know about Surrey or transit, sir, because you have to take the Canada Line, transfer at Bridgeport, get on the 301.
At least you knew. He didn't even know. He's like, I don't know. Does anybody do that? I said, I have no idea. You're the one who lives in Richmond.
Well,
you would know. I'm glad you would know.
That's because I live on transit. Clay, you know, drives downtown with his free parking spot.
Unbelievable. Oh, he's one of those people.
Yeah. He works downtown. He's got a free parking
spot.
Get
rid of him. Get him off the podcast.
We've been trying, but I don't want to because he does give me a ride home from time to time, so it's great that he has his vehicle. I don't have to ride home on the transit.
Does he give Matt a ride home?
No, but Matt doesn't live in Richmond.
Oh, okay.
Matt lives, I don't know, somewhere, but not Richmond.
He wouldn't go out of his way to give Matt a ride home. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I'd like to think he would.
I hope so, too.
Oh, dear. Let's talk about what we see upcoming for the week. So the Canucks get that, you know, 1 week break in between a home and home series because the NHL's new idea of creating controversy is to put time in between. And now they play something like 10 games in
it's
like
a really
12
tough
days
stretch.
Or
yeah.
something like that.
Yeah.
So we're going to see between now and the next podcast, 4 games. We've got a 3-game road trip. So we got Dallas on Tuesday. We got the Blues on Thursday. We got the Avs on Friday and then home for the Capitals next Sunday. So this road trip, so I'm going to say that that's, if the Canucks can get 3 points out of those 3 games, I'm happy.
Yeah, no, the Dallas game is going to be tough. That's going to be a really, really tough matchup. And then the back-to-back, I mean, obviously St. Louis, who have, I think, you know, taken another step up in everyone's imagination in terms of quality. It's a tough trip. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, you mentioned how they brought in Corrado and he's been called up. Will we see him maybe? There's a lot of questions. Will we see Bo Horvat? Well, you know, Bo Horvat's been farmed out to Utica for a few
conditioning stint. And I'm actually curious. Does a conditioning stint count against his sliding scale?
No. He's basically... I'm not surprised. I thought they might try to take advantage of this. We may see him do it again. It's the kind of thing where they can send him down for 2 weeks. They basically say, listen, he hasn't been playing very much.
Yeah.
There are certain aspects of it that, you know, someone can stand up and say, no, that's not fair. You know, you can't do that because you guys are just trying to hide him.
Because to me, it's almost convenient that he's getting, you know, let's say AHL. I was going to say NHL style play, but he's getting AHL play when he doesn't qualify to play in the AHL.
Well,
and if it doesn't count against the sliding scale.
Despite the fact, you know, it's one of those ones. It's the rules say 9 NHL games, and that's, you know, once you've played your 10th, you have to stay. You can't go back down. So him going to the AHL, I mean, the irony of the whole thing is that that's where actually he should be.
Oh, no doubt.
Right? You know, that he's a guy that needs to play a tougher quality game. You know, that going to the OHL as a 19, 20-year-old, as he's going to be, doesn't really serve him any purposes. It doesn't help him at all. Because in the end, he's playing against 16-year-olds. That doesn't, you know, the only thing that you could say that would be good, he needs to go there and dominate, right? But the reality is that we're 98% sure he's going to dominate. We'd rather see him playing in the AHL against other adults of a similar age and slightly older. So, you know, the funny thing is that him getting some AHL time actually is the best route possible.
Oh, I'm not complaining.
No, like, absolutely.
I think that exactly.
And they don't have
that
to burn it. They don't burn a year of his NHL time. So, you know that potentially they can milk it as long as possible, and that we'll see where he comes in a week or two's time.
Yeah. Well, I look at it this way. This is the new NHL. This is the NHL that can hire Chris Pronger to be in the Department of Player Safety when he's still under contract to another team.
Which apparently, according to the NHL's bylaws, is totally illegal.
Which, yeah, well,
let's not even go there.
Well, I have a legitimate reason that the NHL could do that with Chris Pronger. See, he's on a progressive graduated return to work, and because they had to provide him modified duties.
There you go.
He's simply on loan to the, you know, Department of Player Safety,
learning about injury of other players or something.
Yeah, exactly. So that he has a future beyond, you know, whatever.
I love it.
But no, we got those three games. We got back to back end of the week against
that St. Louis Colorado matchup's going to be tough. St. Louis is going to be really hard, and Colorado. I mean, here's the thing: Colorado have some good goalies. They've got some good young players, right? The percentages last year were completely against them. But the reality is that if you're in the kind of that range of, you know, you got some good shooters, you got some good goalies, you can make the percentages work for you even if they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Is anyone convinced they can really keep that rolling? No. But the reality, they're a fun team. They've got some dangerous players. I mean, Gabriel Landeskog, Nathan MacKinnon. Those guys are unbelievable. And then you say, oh, you got Matt Duchene as well. Like, holy smokes, you know. And, the key with that game in the end is it comes down to what are the Canucks able to do in the offensive zone? Because the weakness on the Avalanche is their back end. That this is not a terribly dominant defensive team. And that their goalies right now, they've got this horrifying goalie situation that, you know, to begin the week, they've got both their goalies out. And so they're playing their AHL guys. So, you know, that'll be obviously that's the end of the week. And so we'll see what their injury situation is. But that's a game that you've really got. If you're starting to identify games that the Canucks really have to win, and obviously it is still only October.
Are you using the words must win?
I'm saying must win. I am. I'm saying, you know, in many ways, that Friday game, that's a must win. You got to start taking points on the road. I mean, you identified 3 points.
And
right?
That's two of them were coming out of that game.
And I think if you identify, if you can get, I think 3 points is a fair estimate, because if you come out of this road trip 1-1-1 or something like that, you're looking great. If you're talking about getting, you know, a bounce back, especially on the second night after what's, I think, going to be an immensely challenging St. Louis game, following a very challenging Dallas game, that game at the end of the trip, I think, is going to be the kind of thing, even though it's the second of a back-to-back traveling two-night road trip, you've got to take 2 points that game. I really think that.
Yeah, and that's the game I identify. I find it funny that years ago, must win was saved for like February, March, April.
Yeah.
Now, you know, 2 weeks into a season, it's a must win. And you're right. If you give up these points now with the parity that we see in the NHL so early, it comes back to haunt you come playoff time. How do the Canucks make the playoffs? They have to beat one of these teams. Like Dallas and Colorado, I think, are fighting for either top of the division or one of the wild card spots.
Yeah.
And sure, they're not in the Pacific. The Pacific's no slouch.
Mm-hmm.
You've got California, which is going to be at the top.
Yeah.
And then you're essentially fighting tooth or nail for that fourth spot against another division who's got some strong teams as well. So, to me, Colorado's where they get a point. And I'm going to say, I'm actually going to think that they're going to fight hard to get a point out of Dallas.
You know, I mean, we're looking at 45 wins thereabouts to make the playoffs, right? And, you know, so you talk about it's sort of a six plus month season. You know, you're talking about 7-8 wins a month. And that's a huge, huge challenge. And, you know, the Canucks have got 3 already in October, but they still, you know, they've got to find, as you said, at least 1 win on this road trip. And you know, all of a sudden we're looking at Halloween and, you know, how many wins have, you know, it didn't help that they only had 3 games in the first 11 days or whatever it was of the season. But nonetheless, there's points on the table and they got to start taking those points.
So they come home to the Caps on the Sunday. That's a good Caps team. And
that is.
The fact that Ovechkin is buying into what Trotz is selling really surprises me.
I don't know. I mean, I find it so interesting to see how we react to players. You know, Ovechkin has been one of the best players in the league. You know, as people have pointed out, you know, we forget that he scored 60 goals, like, you know, 8 years ago. But almost every other season, he scored like 40 to 50 goals every season. The guy's a danger. Is he lax on back-checking sometimes? Yeah. But you know what? When a guy's getting you a goal every game, every other game, those are the kinds of things you can...
Well, you do the math.
You do the math.
Yeah,
you know?
If he's getting one goal and giving up, you know, a quarter of a goal a game...
It's worth it. And you know what? As you said, Barry Trotz, huge addition. I mean, the numbers were so interesting to watch in terms of, you know, just the percentage of shots they were getting in a game. When they let go of Bruce Boudreau, mm-hmm. you know, obviously there were other issues going on. And I think there's always the human factor is always important. That the numbers are really, the numbers tell you the results, but the human factor still has an important role to play. Did they pull the trigger on Bruce Boudreau too fast? Probably. Because we've seen the results he's getting in Anaheim.
Yeah.
But sometimes you do need to change that up. Was Dale Hunter the right replacement? Absolutely not. Was Adam Oates? Well, maybe he could have learned to be that guy. But clearly we know what Barry Trotz, what his record in Nashville is. The guy, you know, is one of the nicest men in hockey. He understands the game. He understands the basics. Now he's actually got some talent to use.
Yeah,
that's going to be a very dangerous team coming in.
Well, I liken Ovechkin to what we saw here in Vancouver with Pavel Bure, where, you know, what was defense to Pavel? Well, yeah. I have the puck in the other end. That was defense to him.
Yeah.
So, to me, you got to give some flexibility to Ovechkin. That's where, to me, Boudreau was trying to manage the player as opposed to manage the game.
Like, yeah,
I find that when you start managing players, you're not doing what the job requires, which is the game, which is constantly changing. It's always going to remain dynamic.
Yeah.
And if you continue to focus on what's consistent, that being the player, the results will never pay for themselves. Regardless.
Well put.
I'm going to look forward to that game on that Sunday. Anywho, I think we've been chatting about everything we can bloody well chat about.
I'm not sure there's anything left. We've made fun of Clay.
Yep.
We've not talked about Matt.
Nope.
We've talked about Canucks' performance this weekend.
Which, in two games in 2 weeks, was awesome.
Right. And we've done a very nice look ahead.
I think so.
You know what? I'm happy to be here, and I've enjoyed it. Enjoyed my little run here.
Well, I think we have you. Are you going to be back next week?
We'll see what happens. I don't know. It depends on whether you guys will have me
back. You know what? Maybe what we should do is we should just, like, replace Matt or Clay and keep you.
Oh.
Like, I know Matt was trying to replace Clay and myself with you.
Oh, yeah.
But I'd like the, you know, the three-person
dynamic.
Well,
I'm enjoying this dynamic that I'm building between the three of you, and I'll let you guys just fight it out.
Sounds good. Or we could have a four-person podcast. Anyhow, wrapping things up here, you can find us always online at CanucksHockeyBlog.com or on Facebook. It's Facebook.com/CanucksHockey. We also have our new Facebook page for this podcast. It's Facebook.com/C4Podcast. Make sure you go give us a like there and start promoting us for all thousands and thousands of you that are listening right this second.
Do I get to plug myself quickly?
You can plug yourself.
At Rising Action on Twitter, of course, provinceports.com. And we'll leave it at that.
Sounds good. So on behalf of Canucks Hockey Blog, Matt and Clay, who are not here, thanks for tuning in. With that, we're out.